Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. I'm Alex Michelson. We are at the time now where people are voting in elections in California. And one of the closest is the California 41st District, Ken Calvert versus Will Rollins. We will hear from both of them in a moment. That district, though, so close that President Trump is coming nearby to campaign this weekend in the Coachella Valley. So on our panel this week, two of our favorites, two of our original panelists, Areva Martin and Joel Pollack. We talk about what's happening with former President Trump, Joel's new book, Areva's new cross-country tour, criminal justice reform, the Senate race, and more. Here's Joel and Areva. Joel, Areva, welcome back to The Issue Is. Good to see both of you. Congratulations on the book, Joel.
Thank you.
This is a wrecking ball.
It's a wrecking ball.
Areva might interpret this as a ball and chain, but it is a wrecking ball. We'll talk more about this book in a moment. But one headline that struck a lot of people this week is that Trump coming to California in the middle of this time when swing states are voting. What do you make of the fact that with this precious time in the campaign, he's doing a rally in one of the bluest states?
So candidates from both parties come to California to raise cash. So there's definitely a fundraising element to it. But he also is trying to help Republican candidates win congressional seats. Democrats took seven seats from Republicans in 2018. Republicans won four of those back in 2020, held them in 2022. And the fate of control of Congress is really in the balance. So I think he's helping out because he's looking toward his governing agenda. He can't get things done if he has to work with a Congress that's controlled by people who want to impeach him again. So I think he wants to make sure he comes in with a Republican Senate and a Republican House.
And Ken Calvert's district is right up against Coachella. We'll talk to Ken Calvert a little bit later. What do you make of Trump spending time here now?
Well, I agree. Obviously, there's some critical House races, and he's trying to, you know, put his thumb on the scale of those House races. I don't think it'll matter. California went 29% for Joe Biden in the last presidential election. California is going to probably outperform because Kamala Harris is a daughter of California. And I think it's pretty clear that the House is going to shift, and we're going to see control of the House by Democrats this cycle. I think the most significant thing that will happen is the fundraising. Obviously, there's a lot of money in the Coachella Valley, and Trump is tapping into that money. He needs it because we raised $1 billion in about 2.5 months' time, and that's more than Trump has raised in all of 2024. So I'm not surprised that he's coming here trying to pick up more cash.
So let's talk about the swing states, because you are headed to the swing states on a swing state tour. Show up the graphic for that for people that are interested in getting involved in seeing you. Talk about what you're doing, what you're hoping to learn, and what you're hoping to talk about.
So those of us sitting at this table, and most of your viewers are political junkies. They are tuned in every day to the news, to the cable news, to the local news, and they're reading everything. But that's not the average American. The average American is going to work, trying to put food on the table, watching their kids, doing homework, going about their daily lives. So I am going to the swing states to talk to those voters that maybe feel like they haven't been heard, they haven't been seen, that have questions about this election, aren't quite decided on which candidate they're going to vote for, and they need information, and they need it from a trusted messenger. And so the show, The Special Report, I launched during COVID to be just that, to be a source of accurate information, factual information, and I reached millions of viewers. I won two Telly Awards with the show, so I thought, given all the disinformation that's targeted to black voters in particular, it was time to get on the road, knock on some doors, meet voters in swing states, and help people understand what's real and what's fake in this election.
Going to barbershops, going to restaurants, not just the typical rallies.
Where people are.
You've often spent so many years reporting on the road, talking in swing states as well. Where do you think the country is at right now?
Well, voters in swing states share the same concerns generally that voters elsewhere do. The swing states that interest me the most in this cycle are Pennsylvania and Michigan, because those are two swing states in which foreign policy could play a role in the election. In Michigan, you have a large block of Arab American voters, Muslim American voters as well, some of whom are very concerned about the situation in the Middle East. They've launched a campaign to vote either for Trump or not for Kamala Harris. There's an uncommitted movement that's voting for Jill Stein, who's a third-party candidate. In Pennsylvania, Governor Josh Shapiro was on the short list for Kamala Harris for her vice president, and he wasn't picked largely because of objections from the anti-Israel wing of the Democratic Party. And
they deny that that's the reason he wasn't picked.
Well, there's no evidence of that. Yeah.
Well, that's the complaint that many Democrats had. They wrote op-eds about it. They were saying it on TV. But regardless, she didn't choose a swing state governor. She didn't choose Shapiro, who's in Pennsylvania, 19 Electoral College votes. Tim Walz from Minnesota, 10 Electoral College votes, reliably in the blue column. And I think that there's a possibility that even though Jewish voters are overwhelmingly going to vote for the Democratic Party, as they have in many other elections, there could be enough of a shift, even if it's small, toward Republicans that you'll see some action in the Philadelphia suburbs toward the Republicans that could help shift that state. So foreign policy, interestingly, is an issue in Michigan and Pennsylvania.
Yeah, and not something that's talked about traditionally in a lot of these presidential campaigns. Joel, let's talk about your book. Again, The Agenda, What Trump Should Do in His First 100 Days. We talk so much about the personalities of these guys, but don't necessarily talk that much about what he should do. Top two or three things. What should Trump do in his first 100 days?
Rule of law, first of all, many Americans feel that there's a two-tier system of justice. He's got to fix that. Border, he's got to go back to the policies that worked in his first administration. The economy, he's got to make sure that there are steps taken to reduce inflation, make sure we focus on growth. And foreign policy. There are, in addition to Middle East conflicts, there are wars in Ukraine, there are other conflict areas around the world, and he can intervene in ways that will stop those. Joe Biden, for example, campaigned on diplomacy. Diplomacy is back was his big tagline when he took office, but we haven't seen much diplomacy between the Ukraine and Russia. And I think whatever you think of Trump's policy, he certainly is proposing to change that and have the parties sit around the table and come up with an agreement.
Joe Biden, of course, would say that he's brought NATO together to try to
protect but that's one side
Ukraine.
Of the conflict.
Right. So what do you think would be Harris's first 100 days in terms of specific policy actions for people?
Well, what she's been talking about is health care. She's been talking about the opportunity economy. She's been talking about small businesses. And more recently, she's been talking about addressing the issue, the sandwich generation, those people who are taking care of both their children and their elderly parents, and making changes to our health care system that would allow for more assistance for those who are caring for elderly parents, expanding Medicare so that it can be available for in-home health care for elderly people. And I think most importantly is establishing a sense of continuing the sense of civility that was started under Joe Biden. This campaign has been so negative. If you look at all the mudslinging that's happening, all the name calling, Donald Trump routinely calls Kamala Harris stupid. Kamala Harris has an undergraduate degree from Howard University, a law degree from Hastings. She's been a practicing attorney for more than three decades. She's been an attorney general, a district attorney, a U.S. senator, and a vice president. And this man consistently calls her the most pejorative terms ever. So just restoring some sense of civility to our politics, I think, is one of the biggest and most important things that Kamala Harris is going to do.
Joel, I can feel you saying Democrats say some not so nice things about Trump.
Well, I could respond to that, but I actually want to build on something that she said about single generation families now having to care for multiple generations. I think that's something that Republicans need to address and can address. It's one of the things I actually talk about in the agenda. There are changes in some regulations and some aspects of executive order that Trump can do to make it easier for people to extend that kind of care. And I think those are also very important issues to swing state voters. Child care is another one. I think Democrats have talked about it. Republicans have talked about it. You've got these competing proposals on child care tax credits and so forth. But we are arriving at a stage in our economy where many people might want to have more children, but just can't see themselves affording it. Child care keeps people out of the workforce. So it's going to be interesting to see how each party sells that message to their respective voters. But it's good that people on both sides are actually talking about child care and caring for elderly parents.
And if the Democrats or Republicans don't control Congress, it's very hard to get anything done. So a reminder to make any of this agenda stuff happen, why those other races are so important. Let's talk about the issue of criminal justice reform. In 2020, George Gascon won as L.A. County D.A. with promises of progressive reforms. He certainly brought many of those in. This week, Gascon participated in two debates against his opponent, Nathan Hochman, and a recent poll showed Gascon down by 30 points. Now, Gascon was one of the authors of Prop 47 in California a decade ago, but there's a push back to that as well. A recent poll shows 60% of Californians backing Prop 36. I'm going to show you that. Just 21% oppose it. Prop 36 would reform Prop 47 and would intensify penalties for multiple drug or theft crimes. Now, just this week, we saw a rash of robberies at 7-Eleven stores. So we have some video of this. A group of 7-Eleven store owners got together to support Prop 36, saying there needs to be a change. Joel, it seems like there has been a pendulum swing in California from maybe too much locking people up in the 90s to too little locking people up the way some people feel. And now it seems like we're going backwards.
Well, people feel unsafe. People don't feel safe in their neighborhoods. And it doesn't matter whether you're poor or wealthy, you feel vulnerable to crime. We've seen high-profile celebrities, actors, entertainment executives victimized in their own homes. And so people are upset, not just that these crimes are happening, but that the people that we elect to deal with law enforcement and crime don't seem sensitive to that. When George Gascon celebrated 100 days in office, he talked about how many years of prison time he had avoided. Well, whether that's good or bad, that's not what voters care about. People want to know, do they feel safer? Are they able to walk down the street? Can they trust that their kids can walk home from school safely? So I think that Gascon has been insensitive to that. I don't know that his challenger would necessarily do a better job. I've been critical of Nathan Hochman. I think that he has taken some swipes at Republican voters. He was himself a Republican candidate at one point. So I'm not thrilled about the alternative, but I think many voters would prefer anybody to be in office other than George Gascon.
He's, of course, made the calculation that there are more Democrats than Republicans, so he's got to win over the Democrats. Seems to do what Hochman has made. But what do you make of this? Because I know this is an issue you've been working on for decades.
Yeah, what I make of this, Alec, is that Republicans are good at stoking fears, creating this narrative, false narrative, that crime is up and people feel unsafe. And what we see is that crime is down, is at an all-time low, particularly crime, serious crimes like murder. And it's funny how people get really interested in crime when it impacts high-profile people and celebrities and wealthy people. There's been crime in poor black and brown communities in the state forever. Mm-hmm. And we only have these conversations about crime when it starts to impact the celebrity that gets his Rolex, you know, ripped off his arm while he's having dinner or lunch in Beverly Hills. And the issues that motivate crime, we don't want to deal with as a society. Locking more people up is not a deterrent to crime. We've tried that. That's a tried and tired way of addressing crime. Going into neighborhoods, making more after-school programs available, making education better, making sure that schools in black and brown communities have AP courses, providing child care subsidies and things that allow parents to go to work and have their kids in good programs. Those are things we know reduce crime. But nobody wants to talk about that. So we can change George for Bob, for Bill, or whomever, and go back to locking people up, and all we're going to do is create more of a two-tier system, and not a two-tier system that Trump is talking about, but a two-tier criminal justice system where black and brown people are disproportionately targeted, arrested, and incarcerated. That's the two-tier system we should be talking about.
Joel?
I agree with some of what you're saying, because I think that simply locking people up isn't an answer, but there are right ways and wrong ways to do prison reform and criminal justice reform. And I was supportive of the First Step Act under the Trump administration, where Jared Kushner and members of Congress on both sides worked together to pass criminal justice reform that aimed at rewarding prisoners for taking steps to fix their lives, helping them come out and find jobs afterward, rebuild their lives. A lot of conservatives didn't like that, because there are some people who simply want to be tough on crime no matter what, and didn't really see that as advancing in that direction. But I do think we need, as a society, to have a more careful conversation about what the purpose of incarceration is and whether it's achieving the desired outcome. So I'm sympathetic to your point of view. I just think that things are so out of control now in LA County. It's not just about people being locked up. In some cases, people have murdered, they're going to be convicted, but prosecutors aren't allowed to ask for sentence enhancements for particularly cruel aspects or for gun violence. You know, we want to talk about gun violence, but we're not allowed to add certain things. So prosecutors have basically not been allowed to enforce the law. And you see people on the street just taking that and running with it. Criminals feel like they can do whatever they want, and ordinary people feel unsafe.
That's just not accurate. Prosecutors have a tremendous amount of discretion to decide what is the appropriate penalty. What we've had in the state of California are these excessive sentencing for crimes, and our prison system was so big and so bloated that the courts literally said, California, you've got to do better with your prison system. We have this prison to pipeline system. Again, if you're a black and brown and you live in a poor neighborhood in California, we can pretty much predict what's going to happen to you. And that's because we have not invested in these communities in the way that we need to. And locking people up is not the answer. We went through that in the 90s. The three strikes laws were literally people stealing a pizza from a restaurant, getting 20, 25 mm-hmm. years. So we've got to decide what's important in this country, and we've got to make the investment on the front end, because we already know we're going to have more lawsuits. We're going to have bloated prison systems. It's going to cost us more as taxpayers to incarcerate those kids that we just saw on those videos stealing snacks from 7-Eleven. Do we really want them spending 20, 25 years in jail? Is that the answer? Mm. Now, obviously, they should be punished, but we've got to think thoughtfully and creatively about why are they doing that?
Right.
Are they hungry? Are they bored? Because obviously, it's not a whole lot in 7-Eleven that's valuable. It's not like you're going to be doing anything with the Twinkies.
The
you know, the Twinkies slushy. Don't have much value, you know, in the underground market. So why are those kids? It's like kids out of control.
But just to be clear, George Gascon did take away prosecutors' ability to pursue enhancements for things like guns and hate crimes and other sentencing enhancements when he went in there. He took away prosecutors' ability to go to parole hearings with victims. He took away the ability to prosecute a lot of juveniles. I mean, he did do a lot of blanket policy, some of which he's walked back because he realized there was such a pushback.
Well, because at the time, too, we got to look at where this country is. This country is, a schizophrenia around criminal justice. This was after the murder of George Floyd.
Right.
So we saw this just barrage of what's called, progressive prosecutors being elected across this country. The country was saying, no, we need to examine our criminal justice system and the inequities and the way black and brown people are treated in our system. And that's why we saw progressive prosecutors like Gascon get elected. Now the pendulum has swung in the opposite direction. We've had some high-profile crime. I will acknowledge that. Yes, there is crime. And then the answer, though, is not to go backwards. Mm. It may not be Gascon's way, but it clearly is not the way of three strikes and what we saw in the 90s.
Joel?
Well, I agree. We can't simply go back to things that haven't worked. And so I would like to see Nathan Hochman present a better case for how he's going to do something different than what George Gascon has done. But for the ordinary person going to a local pharmacy, for example, used to be able to buy deodorant off the shelf. Now it's behind lock and key for some reason, because there are these mass retail thefts, partly because of Prop 47. Anything under $950 is a misdemeanor, and police know it's not going to get prosecuted. The kids are going to get back on the street. So people just steal, and it's not just kids, it's criminal syndicates and so forth. I think people are feeling unsafe, and they're going to take it out on George Gascon. And whether Nathan Hochman is a good DA or bad DA, we'll see. But it does look like he's going to be our next DA in LA County.
So you're voting for Hochman?
I am not voting for either of them right now.
Really?
I don't. I think Nathan Hochman has to do a little bit more to earn my vote, but I'm open to it.
And he's on the show next week, so tune in.
Okay, good.
Are you voting for Gascon?
Nathan Hochman is a Republican. Let's just be real clear about that. And no, I'm not.
I agree.
I'm not voting for a Republican.
He says that he's now a Democrat and voted for
Kamala Harris. Yeah, I don't like that. I don't know why.
And so did Rick Caruso.
Yeah.
We've been down that road before.
We've
read that book.
Sponsoring Nathan Hochman in a big way, Rick Caruso.
Just be yourself.
Yeah.
Exhibit
A. One other thing that is happening in California, but nobody seems to really notice it. There's a U.S. Senate race between Adam Schiff and Steve Garvey. This week they had their one and only debate. We hosted the first debate in the primary where there was a whole lot more attention on this race. What do you make of this sort of invisible Senate campaign?
Well, there's really not a race, Alec. You know that. Adam Schiff is going to be the next senator for the state of California. In fact, Adam Schiff is out raising money to help other senators in swing states and key Democratic states try to hold on to our slim margin in the U.S. Senate. This is a solidly blue state that is not going to elect a Republican to represent us in the U.S. Senate. So I think everyone knows that. Adam Schiff knows it. He's out campaigning, of course, to win in California. And with Kamala Harris at the top of the ticket, the outpouring of votes, the voter turnout in California is going to be, extraordinary, something we've never seen before. And people are going to vote Dem from the top to the bottom of the ticket, and Senator Schiff will be in office.
What do you make of Steve Garvey's campaign, the way he's tried to do this?
Well, I think he's done as good a job as he can do. I think he's done something admirable by standing up and running. Adam Schiff gamed the primary by spending money to highlight Steve Garvey as his likely opponent because he knew that Democrats wouldn't like it and he knew Republicans would like it. And with the top two jungle primary system we have, he knew that he'd emerge with a Republican candidate. Californians generally don't elect Republicans statewide anymore. So Adam Schiff will be our next senator. The question for me is, how is he going to get along with the other senators? Because the Senate is very much an institution built on relationships. And there are a lot of Republicans who do not like Adam Schiff. And he's going to have to work very hard to rebuild trust with people across the aisle, especially if Democrats are in the minority. I don't think he can do it. We'll see.
Well, Adam Schiff was here with us for our very first episode of The Issue Is. So was Gavin Newsom, who was then lieutenant governor. So was you two. Take a look.
Thank you guys for being part of our first show. This was fun, right?
This is a lot of fun.
Thank great time.
Congratulations
you guys are all
to you.
Awesome.
So there we were. Dan Schnur was with us as well. All these years later, we're still here. You guys both look better. Thank you for all the support of this show over the years. It's kind of cool to get the old group together.
Thank you for doing what you're doing. It's so important. In this moment, having a place where you can get, again, accurate and factual information is so important.
Yeah.
And thanks to your mom for the brownies.
Yes, that's right. My mom started making cookies and brownies back then and is still doing it now. So shout out to Krista Michelson. Our thanks to Joel and Areva. Now we take you to Riverside County for one of the closest congressional races. Meet the candidates.
How are all those signs out?
In Riverside County, it's Republican Congressman Ken Calvert.
Really grateful.
Versus Democratic challenger Will Rollins.
I'm Ken Calvert, and I approve this message.
I'm Will Rollins.
The airwaves flooded with millions of dollars in ads.
Obviously, it's a close election, or they wouldn't be pouring all this money into it.
This is one of the most competitive seats in the entire country.
The biggest freshman class since World War II.
Calvert began serving in the House in 1993. He's the longest-serving Republican from California. Back then, Will Rollins was in the second grade. He's now 40. This Riverside County district used to be one of the most reliably Republican, but it was redistricted to include the more Democratic Palm Springs. Now, the district is 37% Republican, 36% Democrat, and 19% no party preference.
You know, they found a candidate in L.A. who still lives in L.A., airdropped him in, and sending a lot of money his way to take me on.
Rollins say he and his partner, Paolo, actually do live in the district.
Breaking news, Ken, two gay dudes moved to Palm Springs. You know, that's dime a dozen, right?
Rollins first challenged Calvert back in 2022. Calvert won that race by about 5 points. But this time around, a recent USC poll shows the race literally tied at 46 points each.
Folks are hearing our message.
I know all these folks. I feel pretty good about it.
Both candidates say reducing the cost of living is the top issue in the district. Calvert wants to extend the Trump tax cuts he voted for in 2017.
There would be an immediate tax increase to the people here in Riverside County of about $3,600. And so we need to make sure we renew those taxes. That's the big difference. My opponent is for letting those tax deal go away.
Rollins says the Trump tax cuts actually increased taxes for some Californians by restricting deductions for state and local taxes.
We have a member, unfortunately, who voted to punish the blue states in 2017.
Calvert is currently the chair of the Defense Appropriations Subcommittee after years owning restaurants and real estate businesses.
The Democratic Party, quite frankly, is anti-business, have been for a long time.
Rollins started in politics working for Republican Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, and worked for years as a federal prosecutor.
And prosecuted cartel members, gang members, fentanyl traffickers, heroin dealers. We need modern border security.
On immigration, Calvert wants to expand funding for former President Trump's border wall.
We are looking at the unfinished wall as people are walking right through the gaps. Mm-hmm. All that material was there. By the way, all the contracts had been let to finish it. And Biden just let the contracts lapse. And material just rot in the sun.
Sure, do we need a wall in some places? But do we need thermal imaging, drones, more boots on the ground in others? Yes.
Rollins says he'd vote for the bipartisan border bill that Calvert and Donald Trump both opposed last year.
We got to have folks in government who are willing to stand up to their own party, compromise, get common sense border security measures passed.
Because the Senate bill was just basically hiring more people to process up to 5,000 people a day coming in. That's not fixing the problem.
Ken Calvert and the MAGA extremists backed a nationwide abortion ban.
On abortion, Rollins is running ads accusing Calvert of supporting a national abortion ban.
Ken Calvert has backed a national ban with no exceptions. I know he's trying to backpedal away from that.
This idea of maybe a 15-week abortion ban.
That's not going anywhere. I mean, I'm not in support of it. It's not going anywhere in the House, and it's not going anywhere in the Senate. The state of California has made a decision on abortion.
Rollins would support a national bill guaranteeing abortion rights in every state. Calvert says it's a states' rights issue.
And I always believe, as a Federalist, decisions are best made by the closest to the people. California has made its decision. Mm-hmm. And so that decision stands.
It shouldn't be left up to the states. This is a fundamental freedom. Those of us in California should care about whether women are dying in Georgia because their reproductive freedom is gone.
Both Rollins and Calvert feeling confident with ballots now out.
In this district, people are ready for it, and that's why we're going to win on November 5th.
I feel pretty good about it. I've been through a few elections. I know how they go, and I think the issues are on our side.
We offered to host a debate between Rollins and Calvert 2 years ago and again this year. Rollins accepted both times. Calvert has never accepted any debates against Rollins anywhere. Our thanks to Will Rollins and to Ken Calvert. Up next, a story from SoFi Stadium. We went out to Inglewood to meet up with the Rams as they celebrated cancer survivors. We met some incredible people. Here's our report. The LA Rams honorary captain is cancer survivor Ashley Porter.
That gives me lots of strength to keep fighting.
Right by her side, Rams legend Torrey Holt.
Touchdown to Torrey Holt!
The Super Bowl winning wide receiver says he's found his greatest purpose off the field.
So rowdy.
Helping families fighting cancer.
This is a passion of mine. This is my life's mission.
Ashley first battled leukemia in 2007. It was so rough. She told her parents if cancer ever came back, she wouldn't go through treatment again. 17 years later, it came back. But this time, she has a 3-year-old daughter, Lainey.
Having a daughter, that kind of changed my perspective, and I'm doing treatment to fight for her.
Torrey Holt can relate. He lost his own mother to cancer at just 43 years old.
I've been through this. I still deal with trauma at times with this. And they enlighten me, they inspire me.
24 years ago, Torrey and his brother Terrence co-founded the Holt Brothers Foundation in honor of their mom. They focus on helping the kids of parents who are battling cancer. Terrence Holt says they've worked with young people around the country.
The support that we wish we would have had when our mother battled cancer and our family went through it, that we're here to support as many as people as we can.
Ashley, Ronnie, and Lainey?
Yes, hi.
Torrey Holt.
Torrey first met Ashley and family at the Rams training camp back in July.
Give him high five.
Yeah, we're off to a great start.
He paid special attention to young Lainey.
A lot of times the attention goes to the parent, resources, time, energy, love, care. But what about the kids?
He surprised the family with this.
You're going to be the captain of the Crucial Catch Cane coming up, and we have a custom jersey for you.
That's my favorite number, too.
And it's her favorite number.
Crucial Catch is the NFL's league-wide effort to intercept cancer early.
Ashley, one of 12 different cancer survivors being honored by the Rams here at SoFi.
At halftime, some of them ringing the bell to mark the end of their treatment. It's emotional for Lauren Peltz.
What went through your mind when you rang that bell?
I did it. I did it for me. I did it for my two beautiful kids, and I'm here, and I'm thriving, and I'm grateful.
Ashley also grateful for this experience. The family given a sweet to soak it all in together.
It really gives us hope, you know, that there's people behind us that know about the struggle and know what we're going through.
I just want to thank Torrey and the Rams for everything that they do for us. It's amazing.
find out more about the Holt Brothers Foundation, go to holtbrothersfoundation.org. Loved that. Love the Rams for doing that and appreciate what they're doing to connect with the community. Thanks for listening to the Issue Is podcast. Next week, Nakin Hockman, who is running for L.A. County District Attorney and looks right now like he's going to be the next L.A. County District Attorney. That plus more of the week's politics. Go Dodgers. Congrats to them on advancing. That's exciting. It's great to be in playoff mode for baseball. I'm Alex Michelson. We'll see you next week for more of The Issue Is.